Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. I'm John Hodge, joined by Velveeta Onion Boy, JC Abbott. JC, how you doing from the West Coast?
I'm doing well, but the nicknames just keep getting more and more complicated. Like, I add a new one every week, it seems. I'm just a cavalcade of flavors at this point, just different foodstuffs being jammed together.
A cacophony of calories, one might say.
That's what people say when I walk in a room. There goes that cacophony of calories.
I love it. Yeah, and you know what? I think good nicknames should evolve over time. Nicknames should never be in one place. I like when they change and they grow and they evolve. Because oftentimes, right, nicknames might originate in a way that makes sense. You know, like someone's named John and you call them Johnny, and then you know, 7 years go by and you're calling them like, you know, Fuddy Duddy Money Pants. And it's like, how did you get from point A to point B? And it's like, I don't remember. There were 17 different iterations in the middle and now it's Fuddy Duddy Money Pants. You know, like you just go, and I think that's great. I think it's wonderful.
Well, I mean, let's break this one down for the people, because I think some people might not know how we got to Velveeta. Basically, it was Jumbo Cheeseburger based on a YouTube comment. Then it became Jumbo Cheese. Then it became just cheese, and then somebody suggested that cheese meant Velveeta, so I became Velveeta, shortened to Vel occasionally, and now because I ate an onion, I'm Velveeta Onion Boy. So that's quite the evolution already.
Yes. Well, and that's just since like 2022 Grey Cup, I think, when we were in Hamilton, that nickname originated. So like, that's not that, or that was 2023 Grey Cup. 2022 is Regina. 2023 Grey Cup was Hamilton. So we're talking like 18 months, people. That is a tremendous clip of nicknames. And eventually, I think if we work all the way around the circle, we'll get back to just JC in like 2029. So looking forward to that. That'll be great. By the way, not that I want to talk about the weather off the top of the show, but I would be remiss if I didn't mention the insane weather that is currently happening in Winnipeg. Yesterday, it was 37 degrees Celsius here, and I love the idea that there are lots of players, and I know it was hot in Saskatchewan as well, the heat's currently heading east, but there are players in training camp who are from like South Florida, Southern Alabama, Georgia, like some of the hottest places on the continent, and they're coming up to Canada, and it's like, oh man, it's going to be so cold. And they get here and it's like, it's 98 degrees. It is 100 degrees outside. It is hotter here than my home. What is going on? And I mention that because Saturday, when I'm supposed to be golfing, it is a high of 5 degrees Celsius with a chance of snow. So the weather is drunk right now. And if anybody is looking to do a fun piece from training camp, please talk to American rookies from the South who have never been to Canada and asking, what is it like to experience a 35 degree gap in Celsius temperature, which is like a 90 degree gap in Fahrenheit, because the weather is drunk. It doesn't make sense. And it's wild. It is bewildering.
They're just in for a very, very rude awakening once they experience a Winnipeg winter. It's like, congratulations, you made the football team. Now it's minus 40.
Exactly. I do remember one time I was in university and we had a professor who had just moved from the States. He lived in New York previously, I think was originally from DC. But anyway, it was like the second week of November and it was like -5 and he's wearing the parka, the thick hoodie underneath, the gloves, the toque, the scarf, like the boots, everything, like full winter getup. And he was like, oh my God. I knew winter was going to be this cold. I didn't think it was going to be this bad. And then somebody just started laughing. And he's like, what's so funny? And they're like, you think this is winter? And he was like, oh my God, what are you talking? Like, he thought this was it. It's like, no, it's the second week of November. It's going to get worse. It's going to get really bad. Just you wait. But anyway, CFL players don't have to worry about the -30 usually. But yeah, the -5s, the -10s on the prairies.
Oh, jinx us, Hodge.
Absolutely. Yeah, don't jinx us. Grey Cups in Winnipeg. Knock on wood. Knock on wood. Knock on wood. I am John Hodge, joined, of course, by JC Abbott. Today, we're discussing the first wave of CFL training camp cuts.
Zach Collaros being suspended for the first game of 2025.
TSN's preseason broadcast schedule.
Snoop Dogg playing BC's home opener.
And Chad Kelly being 50-50 to start the season. But first, Canadian quarterback Taylor Elgersma has officially signed with the Green Bay Packers. The Wilfrid Laurier standout did a top 30 visit with the team prior to the NFL draft and visited them again earlier this month for rookie minicamp. JC, what does this mean for Elgersma?
Well, it means it's a tremendous accomplishment, first and foremost. We have not seen a Canadian university quarterback do this in what I would describe as the modern era. It's been a long, long time since one has signed a contract in the NFL, and that's what Taylor Elgersma just did. Now, whether or not he makes the team, what his career looks like from now on is up to him, but I think there's optimism that the Green Bay Packers are high on him, right? This is a team that did their homework extensively. They worked with him at the Senior Bowl. They brought him in for a top 30 visit, and then they brought him into minicamp just to make sure that they were seeing what they were seeing. Now, if he was from any other school south of the border, Hodge, I don't think they would have required all those different touch points to make this decision and give him a contract. I think that's just the reality. It's the fact that he's coming from Wilfrid Laurier and from three down football that has or had people a little bit scared, but the arm talent is there and the progress is there even from the start of this draft process to now that Taylor Elgersma is improving by leaps and bounds. So he'll come in and start training camp as the number four on that Green Bay Packers depth chart. But I think he has all the talent and upside, if they're willing to invest in him long-term, to at least stick on the practice roster as that potential number three and become a long-term play for the Pack.
Yeah, longtime NFL assistant coach Jason Vrabel, he is now the passing game coordinator in Green Bay, was the offensive coordinator of Elgersma's team at the Senior Bowl. So there was an overlap, and one could argue that it was, in fact, that invitation to the Senior Bowl that helped Elgersma get this opportunity. Obviously, we'll never know, but without that invitation, him becoming the first U Sports quarterback ever to garner an invitation to the event, it's possible the signing doesn't happen. And I mentioned that, JC, because coincidentally, that invitation likely would not have come if Curtis Rourke was healthy. Curtis Rourke had the torn ACL. He had the thumb injury that he suffered in 2024. If he's healthy, he probably goes to the Senior Bowl and plays.
He was invited to the East-West Shrine and accepted his invite.
Well, but it's possible to go to both, is it not?
No.
Oh,
they're
well,
competing events
enough.
That hate each other.
Well, regardless, the point is, if Curtis Rourke is healthy coming out, I think there's less incentive for NFL teams to look at Taylor Elgersma as a product. And I have been skeptical about his NFL acumen, we'll call it, not because of his abilities, but because of the logo on the side of his helmet, right? NFL teams do not know what to make of U Sports film. When you look at U Sports prospects who have garnered NFL opportunities through the draft or through signing as undrafted free agents, generally it is because they have unbelievably eye-popping measurables. Giovanni Manu being a perfect example, a guy who the Detroit Lions traded up to get at 6'8". He runs like a gazelle, right? There's just not that many people on the planet who can do that. And so Taylor Algersma, I think he's a brilliant player. I've sung his praises. I think he's going to be a CFL starter if and when he makes it up to the CFL. But I am ecstatic for him that this opportunity did arise. I think the stars needed to align. The Senior Bowl happened. He did well there. He did well for the top 30 visit. He did well again for the mini camp invite. By the way, when you talk to people around the league, the conversion rate from rookie mini camp invite to contract is somewhere between 1% and 3%. Mm-hmm. Algersma hit that. So good for him. The quarterback room in Green Bay is maybe not the most friendly in the NFL because, of course, Jordan Love is embedded there as the starter, long-term guy. They've also got two NFL draft picks on the roster, Malik Willis and Sean Clifford. Now, Willis wasn't picked by the Packers. He was a 2022 third-round pick of the Tennessee Titans, went up to Green Bay in 2024. Sean Clifford has been there for a few years now as a former fifth-round pick. So Elgersma's best path forward might be practice roster, but you're going to make a lot more money on an NFL practice roster than you would on your rookie CFL contract. Rookie CFL contract is only worth about $55,000 US per year. If he stayed on the practice roster all year, he would make somewhere in the neighborhood of $250,000 US. So I see this as a huge win for Taylor Algersma. And I also, by the way, don't see this as a loss for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers because, of course, getting NFL caliber coaching and development will help Algersma in his potential journey to becoming a CFL starter. The concern for Winnipeg, I'm sure, is, hold on, what if he does too good, right? What if he ends up sticking down there for 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, dare I say? That would be a problem for Winnipeg. But for the first year, maybe two of Elgersma's career, I don't think the Blue Bombers are panicking because they don't want him to start anytime soon anyway.
Yeah, I don't think that's starting in the NFL is in the cards, at least in the immediate future, right? He's in that two-horse race with Sean Clifford to be that final quarterback on the Green Bay Packers roster. And Clifford obviously was a draft pick. That matters to a certain extent, but he's at the end of his contract, he hasn't proven very much. And I think this is exactly the type of move that could knock Clifford out of his spot because you've got a player in Algersma, even if he's not quite as polished or as good as Clifford is in the preseason, per se, hypothetically, you know there's more upside there. And it's been heartening to see the conversation out of Green Bay from that coaching staff where they're saying, well, look at how he's improved even from the first time we saw him, even from the Senior Bowl coming in to his top 30 workout or coming in to our mini camp after that. They're seeing the leaps and bounds of improvement. If Taylor can demonstrate that throughout training camp, not that he is necessarily the third best quarterback there right from the start, but that he is improving at the fastest rate, I think there is going to be an incentive for the Packers to keep him around. Truly the worst part of this situation, Hodge, it's not the Bombers who are going to suffer. It's me who's going to suffer because now every time when we talk about rookie minicamp invites before the CFL draft, and I say, well, they really don't matter. They shouldn't affect how you're drafting. Somebody's going to bring up Taylor and how he signed this contract. I think that was in the works before he accepted the minicamp invite. It was just another box to check, frankly, but it's going to be brought up for all eternity as the sort of one shining example of a guy who broke the odds or beat the odds and broke the mold.
Well, I do think that rookie minicamps, it's still a point well taken because at the end of the day, if a team really likes you, they should just sign you, right? And not mm-hmm. risk the possibility of another team doing the same thing, right? That's the incentive to sign a guy and not wait for rookie minicamp because it's like, well, anybody else could sign him. Like let's get it done. And that didn't happen. Now we do know that Algersma received a ton of rookie mini camps. You can only do two of those. He had the first one in Green Bay. The second one was going to be in Buffalo. He didn't end up going because he got the contract offer. And I believe there was some immigration paperwork that had to be done, partly thanks to the Cheeto in the White House, who's slowed down that process to some extent. But now that that's all sorted out, good for Taylor Eggersma. This is a win for him. This is a win for U Sports. This is a win for Canadian quarterbacks. And I'm thrilled for him. I really am. Again, I was skeptical that this would happen, not because of his abilities, but because of the circumstances around this. Good for him. Hopefully he gets a legit shot from here on out. And I think he will, because as much as the Packers have a deep room right now, they are a team. If you look at Jordan Love, even dating back to Aaron Rodgers, they have shown patience with quarterbacks, right? This is a team that legitimately develops players. I think they're forced to do that to some extent because they're always a little bit leery given just the nature of their city about having to recruit free agents, right? There's not a lot, no disrespect to Green Bay, but there's not a lot of NFL players who have that city number one, right, on their list of like, well, that's the team I got to go to if I ever get free. So I think that developmental mindset, that culture that they've established could be beneficial to Taylor. Good for him getting this opportunity. And suddenly, Green Bay Packers preseason football must watch for Canadian football fans all across our country. Never thought I'd say that that would be the case. But yes, preseason football out of Green Bay must watch for CFL fans this fall.
Zach Collaros has been suspended for the first game of the 2025 regular season after failing to reply to correspondence from the Canadian Center for Ethics in Sport within 24 hours back in February. Hodge, is the punishment legitimate?
Technically, yes. Technically, yes. And the reason I say that is because Zach Collaros broke the rules. The rule is that when you get a call from the CCES during the offseason about a test, you have to respond within 24 hours. They called him twice. They texted him. They emailed him. And he failed to reply. Thus, he should be suspended. The suspension is supposed to be two games, right? That's the suspension that you get for either testing positive or refusing to test. We saw a few years ago, AC Leonard, then a pass rusher for the Saskatchewan Roughriders, got popped for two games because he couldn't produce a sample right after a game and reportedly waited hours and hours and hours trying to produce a sample, wasn't able to. At least that was his story. So two games is supposedly the rule. Now, Collaros only got suspended for one. Reading between the lines, talking to people, this appears to have been reduced by a game given the circumstances. And I do think that the CFL has hurt its own case at least a little bit by acknowledging that this contact system is flawed. There are other leagues, for example, where if a player is contacted in the off season and they do not reply within 24 hours, then the communication gets brought to the team or the player's agent or both, who can then go to the player and say, hey, you need to respond. And I appreciate, by the way, why the 24-hour window is a thing. If the window is a week or 2 weeks, obviously that creates possibilities for players who are doping to intentionally wait as long as possible to reply with the intention of, oh, good, I have time to let this drug get out of my system before I'm tested, and therefore I won't get caught breaking the rules. So I spoke to the CFLPA. They confirmed that this 24-hour window has been in place for a long time. But when I asked how many players are tested in the offseason, they declined to answer. And when I said how many players have previously broken this 24-hour rule and not gotten back to the CCES, they also declined to answer, saying we don't publicly answer questions that much relating to the drug policy. And I think that's done largely to avoid the possibility of players learning what those rules are, potentially as a way to circumvent them. So I get that. But when Zach was speaking to the media first day of rookie camp, where the Bombers quarterbacks all participated, he said he knows of lots of guys who have gotten these calls in the offseason, not returned them, and the CCES has just kind of gone down to the next guy on the list and called them, and nothing's come of it. And honestly, I believe that, because first of all, a lot of people don't answer their phone when there's a call from an unknown number. And what the CFLPA told me is that prior to 2024, the text message and the emails were not part of the communication. Up until 2023, the communication was just a call. So if you don't get the call, right, and there's lots of legitimate reasons for missing a call, maybe your voicemail is full, maybe your number has changed, maybe you are on vacation out of the country, right? There's lots of reasons. We've never seen a suspension like this before. So I am, again, Zach broke the rules. the suspension should happen. But I also am skeptical and find it dubious that no suspension like this has ever happened before, because I simply am not naive enough to believe that Kolaris is the first player ever to not answer a call during the offseason, especially given that the addition of the text and the email are somewhat recent. And for many years, it was just phone calls. Like, I'm sorry, if you live in Georgia during the offseason, I have a hard time believing that you're going to answer random phone calls from Canada in March and return them within 24 hours. I just am.
It feels an awful lot like somebody's trying to make an example out of Zach Kolaris to ensure that other players are more compliant to this in the future. Because just like you, Hodge, I am skeptical that he is the first player to ever, commit this infraction, right? And just look at it from this perspective. There are situations where you might not have access to your phone for 24 hours. You drop it in the toilet, right? It's broken. You're out of the country. You're in transit. Maybe you're flying to Australia. You may not have access to your phone for that time. Well, all of those contact points, the phone calls, the text messages, the email, for most individuals, their primary way of receiving those things is from their cell phone. So you've created a system where if a guy happens to not have his phone for 24 hours, which is, obviously not something a lot of people suffer all the time in our modern society, but is an entirely plausible thing, would be an infraction in this current setup. To me, that needs to be changed. I think there are things that are being done, at least behind the scenes, to amend that, to contact the team, to contact the agent, I think would be essential steps here. But I'm going to get on my soapbox a little bit more here, because I've made my opinions necessarily or controversial opinions about PEDs known on this podcast before. Shouldn't do them. They're terrible for you. Don't take them. But I'm not interested in the moral quandary of the clean sport and all the pearl clutching that happens when there is a positive PED test. What I will say is, can we get some damn consistency here, right? Because we've got guys who are popping hot for PEDs who are getting 2-game suspensions if they test positive in season. We've got guys who are not producing samples that are 2-game suspensions. We've got guys that are not responding to phone calls that are supposed to be 2-game suspensions, but are actually 1-game suspensions because I guess we're getting it reduced. But then we've got kids like Darian Newell who are coming out of U Sports, and simply because they're testing positive at a different time than another CFL player, are banned for an entire year. Like, that does not make sense to me. Let's have some consistency. I do not care about the amateur rules. I don't think Darian Newell should have been handled differently. I don't think any player should be handled differently. If you are going to give out these suspensions, I don't want to see Zach Kolaris reduced to 1 game. I don't want to see anyone getting a different length of suspension. It should be exactly the same across the board. Otherwise, to me, it just loses all legitimacy. I do not think there should be a consideration for whether it's amateur or professional. From the CFL's perspective, U Sports can do whatever the hell they want. That's up to them. But the CFL implementing amateur rules makes no sense to me. The CFL reducing this when they don't reduce it for other players doesn't make a ton of sense to me. Like, I just want to see consistency here. If you're going to punish it, punish everybody the same. That's what I'd like to see.
But I think you could make an argument to the opposite and say, well, in a way, the league should be applauded for suspending a 2-time MLP, right? Like, Zach Kolaris has been in this league since 2012. He's one of the most recognizable players in the league. He's won multiple Grey Cups, played in about 2,000 of them at this point. And he is somebody who, if you were going to put your thumb on the scale for anybody, right, he is the type of player you would do it for. You'd be like, home opener in Winnipeg. We're going to have a sold out crowd, 32,000 people plus. This is the first game back after, the third straight Grey Cup loss, the finger injury, all of that. If we are, excuse me, my spring allergies. If we are going to make an exception for anybody, let's quietly, behind the scenes, make it for Zach, not suspend him. And, you know, if it's the backup long snapper or, you know, the third string nose tackle or whatever, then who cares? We'll throw the book at him. That did not happen in this case. And so I think that's something that is genuinely positive. And if you listen back to the media availability that Stuart Johnston did for his introductory press conference as the new commissioner of the CFL, the first thing out of his mouth is, as commissioner, I need to protect the integrity of the game. That was the first thing that he said, the integrity of the game. And integrity, to me, means that you follow the damn rules when somebody breaks them. Zach did technically break the rules. Now, I think what hurts, again, the CFL's case is that they essentially admitted in the press release, yeah, our rules is flawed and dumb. Mm-hmm. The CFLPA, and by the way, the CFL did not reply to my request for comment. The CFLPA said that we think it's flawed, and the CFLPA indicated that the CFL agrees that it's flawed. So hopefully moving forwards, there is more of communication, right, where if you don't reply to the CCES, you get an agent or a phone call from the team itself. I think players are very likely in the off season to reply to a call from an agent or from somebody with a team whose name they recognize, who is in their phone, right, who they trust and have built a positive relationship with. Now, I do have questions about players, and for example, Brady Oliveira is one of them, guys who spend half the off season on the other half of the world. If the CFL wants to test Brady Oliveira during the off season, do they send testers to Bali? I don't know about that. That's something that they need to figure out, obviously. But for a guy like Zach Collaros, who spends his offseason in Southern Ontario, by the way, Zach, I believe, has three children under the age of five. And during the offseason, he is their primary caregiver. So I know he's busy, but there's also a 99% chance that he's at home right during the offseason. So that's my feeling on this. I don't think that Zach was treated unfairly, because as a 13-year vet, he needs to know the rules, and he did know the rules. That being said, the rules don't make sense, and I'm highly skeptical that he is the first person to break the rules. And so that is where I would have a potential issue. Hey, if other people have done this exact thing, like this is almost the equivalent of him getting the speeding ticket for going 56 in a 55. And it's like, but I was going the same speed as all kinds of other people who did the same stretch of road going 56 today. Why am I getting the ticket for going 56 at a 55? Yes, going 56 at a 55 is against the rules. It deserves a fine or a ticket or whatever. But if everybody else is going 56 and only one person's getting the ticket, that's where I have a concern. Because again, I'm highly skeptical that up until now, every player who's ever been called during the offseason has responded within 24 hours. I simply don't believe that.
And that's why I'm not a believer in what you presented at the start, which is that the league should be at least applauded for punishing Zach Collaros because he's so high profile, and the fact that that would be an easy one to sweep under the rug. To me, it's more of making an example of him, right? He is the most likely person to punish, because if you punish the backup long snapper, no one's going to pay attention. This is the smacking you on the nose with the newspaper. Everyone listen up. Don't be missing your calls, because we'll go after anybody. And I think if you're setting an example with somebody like Zach Collaros, that has a greater trickle-down effect. So based on the evidence that nobody else has gotten a suspension like this in recent memory, and we both agree that it seems unlikely that nobody else has committed this infraction, to me, that's somebody that you're making an example of. If you're going to make an example out of somebody, it makes sense to make the biggest example possible.
That is a fair point. I just think if you're the CFL, you're shooting yourself in the foot, right, by having a star player miss the first game of the year. Now, it should be noted Winnipeg's first game is in week two because they have a week one bye. But still, you know, Winnipeg's first game of the year is a marquee event, right? It's likely to sell out, and the BC Lions are coming to town. It should be a great game between two tough West Division teams, Nathan Rourke, Zach Collaros. Like, boom, that's the angle. And obviously, by choosing to not have Zach be eligible for that game, you are hurting the entertainment value of that game. So that's why I make that point. But I get where you're coming from, JC. And I also should note that the infraction happens somewhere middle of the month of February, because Zach indicated that after he missed the call, about a week went by, he got a notification from the CFLPA that he'd missed it. And a week later or so, he got a letter from the CFL saying he was suspended for two games. And that letter arrived on February 28th. So I don't believe that this was necessarily Stuart Johnston coming in and saying, oh, well, we have to throw the book at Zach, because he was, of course, not the commissioner of the CFL at that time. He was introduced in late April. Word leaked and was first reported around the middle of April. So he may have been involved in the ongoing, because there were several months where this was a point of communication between Zach and the Bombers and his representation and the CFLPA and the league. Like behind the scenes, they were doing this for months. And actually, surprising that it didn't leak. But maybe Johnston played a role at the end of it. I don't know. Johnston has not been made available to the media since this ruling came out, but we believe that he will be, I believe, at the press, at the preseason game in BC, JC. So you'll hopefully get a chance to ask him about that pretty soon. Okay.
Yeah, tentatively, so I've been told he'll be there.
So tentatively, Johnston will be available to the media, and JC will be able to ask him all about this, because I'm very interested to hear what Johnston had to say and maybe what role he had in this. Did he come in to the job and it was like, yeah, this file's already closed, we're suspending Zach for a game? Or was it, no, you, as the new commissioner, we want you to rule on this? So I'm very interested to hear what that is. TSN will broadcast two preseason games this year, including the Toronto Hamilton game on May 24th and the Montreal Ottawa game on May 30th. The other seven preseason games will be available on CFL Plus, the league's free streaming service. JC, does this make sense?
Look, I'd love to see every single preseason game on TSN. I've made that point known before on this podcast, but yes, this makes sense. It's the same thing that happens every year. TSN can't possibly broadcast all of the preseason games because a number of them take place simultaneously at various stadiums across the country. It's not a particularly high level of product that's going to attract a lot of viewership. So from a cost-benefit analysis standpoint, it doesn't make a ton of sense for TSN. And now the argument that fans need access to this content and to view these games, that doesn't fall on TSN now either, because fans, if you want to watch these games, they are available, and they're available for free on the internet. Just open up your laptop, find your browser on your smart TV, watch it on your phone, do whatever you need to do, but you can watch these games. So to me, that takes a lot of the pressure off TSN. I know people get upset about this in terms of the league broadcaster not broadcasting every single one of these games. But again, logistically, it's extremely challenging. There's a reason why the schedule takes so long to put together and to spread, and all the games are so spread out. It's because you're trying to manage that broadcast schedule and those stadium availabilities. That becomes even more challenging in the preseason. Some of these venues, no doubt, that they are in terms of the training camp games. Obviously, BC is going to Vancouver Island for their game. I believe the Argos are playing their preseason game in Guelph again, or they have in the past, right? They're going to be different broadcast setups that may be challenging for TSN to produce for very low benefit. So it does not surprise me that this is, again, the standard that we're going to.
I think CFL fans would be rightfully upset if, A, the preseason schedule was spread out and it was possible to televise all these games, and B, TSN blocked the CFL from broadcasting the games on their own, right? Theoretically, TSN mm-hmm. would be within its right to say, hey, we pay you tens of millions of dollars a year for these rights. If we don't want to run a preseason game, no, we're not letting you compete with whatever programming we have on TSN that night. You're just taking ratings away from us. We want everybody watching our broadcast. Neither of those things are happening. So CFL fans complaining about this, please stop. Please stop. Preseason football is generally not interesting unless you are a super hardcore nerd who actually pays attention to all of the second and third stringers who are in camp, most of whom will never play a regular season CFL game. admittedly, I get paid to be one of those nerds, so I am one. But I know most CFL fans are not. The other thing is it's free. You can watch any of the preseason games for free. And scheduling-wise, maybe it'd be nice if there was less overlap. Like, for instance, four games are happening on Saturday, May 24th. Two of them start simultaneously at 4 p.m. Eastern time. That's in Winnipeg and Montreal. And then a game in Hamilton starts at 7 p.m. Eastern. And then a game in Calgary starts at 9:30 p.m. Eastern. So there's some spread out, you know, during the day, but they all take place on the same day. And at both of those games, we'll see some, or both of those pairs of games, I should say, we'll see some overlap. It's worse in quote-unquote preseason week three, where all of the games are happening on Friday, May 30th. And for at least a short time, all four will be happening at the same time. Toronto and Ottawa host their games at 7 p.m. Eastern. The Riders host at 9 p.m. Eastern. And then Edmonton hosts at 9:30 p.m. Eastern. So it would be nice if there was less overlap and potentially more of an opportunity for these games to stand alone. But I also appreciate from the CFL perspective, if I'm a team and my last preseason game is on a Sunday and someone else's was 3 days earlier on a Thursday, it's like, well, so now like we're all starting the regular season at the same time, but I have to have preseason players ready to go 3 days later. I'm running increased risk of injury, and I'm starting week one on a short week. So I think the CFL office is under some pressure to really have those final preseason games line up to avoid creating any potential competitive imbalance going into week one, or potentially a competitive imbalance for deciding on those key last cuts that teams often wait late into the night to do the day before they're due. So I get the week three, like those last preseason games lining up. I think maybe there's an argument to do less overlap for the first one. But regardless, CFL fans, you get two on TV, you get the other seven for free. It's hard to argue with that. I don't understand why people are still so upset by this. They get so angry about this, and I don't get it. There are legitimate reasons to be upset. I often find myself taking the fan side to at least some extent. This is not one of those issues. I'm sorry. If you're upset with free football, I don't know what to tell you.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
Your child has so much potential, but your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
CFL teams were forced to trim their rosters to 75 players plus non-counters on Tuesday. Notable cuts include Trey Ogum's Dukes in Edmonton, Dayton Black in Hamilton, and Shea Patterson in Winnipeg. Which one was the biggest surprise to you?
To me, it was Patterson. I didn't think Shea Patterson was a guarantee to make Winnipeg's final roster, but I was surprised he didn't even get to a preseason game. Like, for instance, I was at camp on Sunday, and I asked Mike O'Shea about his quarterback room, and he basically said, look, we can chart what they do in practice, and, you know, the quarterback's coaches can look at the footwork and see what's what. But he said, for me, I want to see the preseason. Right. I want to see how they manage the game. I want to see how they manage the football. He made it very clear that he was waiting for preseason. Evidently, they decided before preseason that Shea Patterson was not going to make this team. And I do suspect that part of the reason Patterson was brought in was because the Bombers didn't know if Chris Streveler would be ready for camp. This is a guy who tore his ACL, MCL, and partly tore his PCL back in early September in the Banjo Bowl. And he's been running around on the field like a maniac, ready to go. Mike O'Shea attributed it to his, quote, Wolverine blood, close quote. And then also, which is a great quote, but then also said, yeah, but he also worked his butt off too. And if you follow Chris Streveler on Instagram, you would have seen how hard he was working all offseason to get ready and get back. So kudos to Chris Streveler for getting back. The Bombers no longer feel, I suppose, they need that veteran insurance policy. I also think they must like what they see from second-year man Terry Wilson and rookie Chase Artopias out of Tennessee Chattanooga. So I'm still surprised that Patterson didn't at least get a look. But if you're a Bomber fan, maybe that's a positive as to what they're seeing out of these young QBs. Because with Zach Kolaris suspended for game one, theoretically, that means Winnipeg has their three quarterbacks for the first game of the season. I would assume Chris Streveler as the veteran will start, and then Terry Wilson and Chase Artopias will be the backups. Because you have to dress three, and right now there's four, and one of them's not playing. So maybe the QB room is settled.
I was surprised to see them move off Patterson so early, but then again, do you really need to see preseason action to see what Shea Patterson is? We know what he is. He's started games in this league. I don't think there's a whole lot of developmental upside left there. So if you were going to eliminate somebody in order to give other players more reps and you knew he was not going to be your guy going forward, it makes sense to an extent to move on from him at this stage before he's stealing actual preseason game reps from players who need to be evaluated. Of the remaining names, I think Trey Ogamas-Dukes stands out to me. I didn't necessarily think he was going to be an absolute star in Edmonton. Obviously, he didn't play much last year, but there's some question marks in that American receiving core. Less so now that Alexander Hollins has been brought in, but I still had Ogamas-Dukes penciled in as a potential starter. I think Arkell Smith is probably that guy now, or one of these rookies that we are going to learn about in the preseason. So that'll be an interesting thing to see play out. And then the other name I'll mention, Hodge, isn't one you had on the list, but I was a little surprised to see Ty James, the receiver out of Mercer, cut by Saskatchewan. I thought there was a lot of hype about him entering training camp, former, you know, consensus FCS All-American, two-time finalist for the Walter Payton Award, pretty high-profile small school receiver that I thought had some upside. Clearly, he didn't show it in training camp, where there's an injury we're not aware of at this stage that made the Riders move on so quickly. But I was excited to see him in preseason action, and we will not get that opportunity to do so.
And it should be noted, you make a great point, JC, about injuries. If you get hurt in camp, the team can just cut you and then you're on your own. Like, I believe the team is on the hook for some of your medical expenses. If you're a rookie, but they do not have to keep you around. Whereas if you are a veteran player, let's say, who gets hurt during the season, you get added to the 6-game injured list. And even if you never play another game that year, you still collect all of your game checks for the rest of the season. So it is common in training camp for a guy to get hurt. And it's like, well, if you're going to be, you know, be down for 6 weeks, we would rather send you home, not have to house and feed you for 6 weeks, and then bring you back when you're healthy on our practice roster. Or we've even seen it before where guys will tear an ACL or an Achilles in camp, get sent home, and they'll be brought back for training camp the next season. So when you see these cuts, it isn't always because the team goes, oh, this guy doesn't have it, he's not going to make it. It can sometimes be because he got hurt. And that is different from the regular season, where once the regular season gets underway, if a guy gets hurt, you can't cut him, right? If you try, even in the off season, sometimes you will get a grievance from the union and the union can win, i.e. Alexander Hollins getting cut this past off season by the BC Lions. And Hollins, by the way, I would imagine one of the reasons as well that Trey Ogamas-Dukes didn't stick longer in Edmonton. Ogamas-Dukes was on the roster well before Hollins was added. And if you've got Alexander Hollins, I mean, yeah, you probably don't need Trey Ogamas-Dukes anymore, depending on how your other American receivers look in camp.
Yeah, the other point there, Hodge, in terms of the injuries in training camp, it's not just about housing and feeding them and the cost associated with that. They also take up a roster spot. There's no, there is a 6-game injured list, as it were, for training camp, but that's 2 veteran injured spots that become non-counter for you. Everybody else, if they're hurt and standing on the sideline, they count towards your roster limit for training camp. So if you're keeping a guy around who's unproven and he's going to be out 6 weeks, that means you've got one less player that you're able to evaluate. Teams, it makes more sense to send him home for the 6 weeks and bring somebody else in, because then you can maximize your ability to evaluate players during training camp, get eyes on another potential option.
And by the way, I have long been a proponent for better treatment for rookies in training camp. I think rookies should get paid for all of camp, and they should get paid more during preseason games. Unfortunately, there's nobody really there to fight for them, because the league certainly doesn't want to give more to the players. And the CFLPA, generally their job as a union is to protect their workers. Well, incoming rookies are not workers. They're not paying union dues. They've never paid a union due. They are looking, in a way, to steal jobs from union members and people who are actively paying dues. So I wish that there was better treatment for incoming rookies into the CFL. I certainly think it's gotten better over the years, but unfortunately, there's really no one to advocate for these people, because the league's not going to do it, and the union has no reason to fight for them until they make a team and thus become union members and start paying dues. So it's not a great setup, in my personal opinion. But I don't know how it realistically changes until somebody steps up and says, hey, these people are being taken advantage of. Could we please try to fix that to at least some extent? It's now time for Hodge's Heritage Moment. On this day in 2003, Bob Cameron announced his retirement from the CFL. The 48-year-old had spent the previous 23 seasons as the punter for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, being named a league all-star 4 times and winning 3 Grey Cups. Now 70, Cameron still resides in Winnipeg, where he owns and operates his own real estate business. I talked to him at a gala event last year. He told me he's got like 25, 30 properties that he rents out, manages, repairs, everything. And he is the sole employee of his company. He has not delegated any of this work to anybody. He is a landlord, a handyman, like everything. He does everything himself. And at the age of 70, I am confident that if you pitted me and Bob Cameron against one another in a series of physical testing and athletic testing events, he would wipe the floor with me. That guy is in incredible shape. Kudos to Bob Cameron on all of his CFL success and success since football.
That doesn't surprise me at all, Hodge, because Bob Cameron is the ultimate jack of all trades, versatile player in my mind, because not only did he punt in the CFL until he was old enough to collect a pension, because he was absolutely ancient when he retired, but this is a guy a lot of people forget who won the Heck Crichton Trophy as a quarterback at Acadia back in his university days. Like, he could sling the rock a little bit. He could run around. It's not like he was just a kicker like so many other players. This is a guy who could do it at a high level if he had to play the quarterback position or you needed some extra yards. So Bob Cameron, truly a special player. I don't think we'll see the likes of him ever again.
Let's go to the 3-minute drill.
The Ottawa Redblacks signed burgeoning star Khalil Pimpleton to a contract extension through 2027. Is that a good move for the nation's capital?
Absolutely. Pimpleton was lightning in a bottle when healthy last year. There's no reason to risk him doing it again and then having the leverage of free agency. Get him under contract now. He's a burgeoning star. Do it. Smart move. University of Saskatchewan quarterback Anton Amandrud led Team West to a win in the 2025 U Sports East-West Bowl. Is he a legitimate CFL prospect?
At this stage, no. He hasn't proven that he is able to protect the football at a high level yet. There's a couple guys in this last year's CFL draft who got drafted as highly as they did simply because they had a boatload of picks off Mr. Amandrud. That's going to have to change going forward if he wants to get a serious professional look. Canadian defensive back Jonathan Sutherland has signed with the Las Vegas Raiders. Will he ever play in the CFL, Hodge?
I still think he will, but this is a key move for Sutherland because this is his third NFL season. If he accrues enough time with the Raiders, he will not be subjected to signing a rookie CFL contract when he eventually reports, I should say, if he eventually reports to the Montreal Alouettes. So kudos to Sutherland on signing. Hopefully he gets a good opportunity there. He's somebody who James Franklin, the head coach at Penn State, still raves about as being one of the most highly intangible players he's ever coached, smartest guys he's ever coached. So I think he deserves this opportunity for sure. Also, speaking as someone who tacitly cheers for the Raiders, they desperately need anybody who can make plays outside of like the same four guys that they've had, you know, for Brock Bowers, Ashton Jeanty, Colton Miller. I guess Geno Smith is on that list now. And of course, Max Crosby. Like outside of that, they just need guys. And Jonathan Sutherland could be one of those guys. The Saskatchewan Roughriders signed first round pick Ali Saad after his minicamp with the San Francisco 49ers. Do you think he can push for a starting job this year?
I think theoretically you could list him as a paper starter and then swap him out as teams so often do under these new ratio rules, but he's not going to beat out Mike Rose or Micah Johnson or even Caleb Sanders for a job right now. I think he's going to beat out Charbel DeBeer for that key Canadian rotational role and then potentially replace one of those aging American veterans down the line. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers have brought longtime DB Brandon Alexander back as a guest coach for training camp. Is he a good addition?
He is. Alexander has a background in education, and he is one of those guys who I think physically was limited during the latter portion of his career, but was talking to people in the building, one of those guys who would be in the building at, you know, 6:30 in the morning to watch film and really study the game. So he's somebody who I've always thought would be a very natural coach, and it's nice that he's getting this opportunity to help out. Snoop Dogg will perform at BC's home opener against the Edmonton Elks on June 7th. JC, what's your favorite Snoop Dogg tune?
Well, I was informed prior to us recording this podcast that he does the Drop It Like It's Hot song, so I guess that's my pick. I'm making it clear calling this is it, not my...
calling it not my... the Drop It Like It's Hot song tells me everything I need to know about your musical taste.
I've made clear this is not my type of music before on the podcast, but I think this is a tremendous get for the BC Lions and for owner Amar Doman, because there are few people more recognizable globally than Snoop Dogg. He is a marquee name, and even I can recognize him, though I can't name any other of his songs.
One might say he's a superstar.
Oh, well, a CFL superstar even now.
Well, now, yeah. Uh-huh.
PJ Walker said he trained this offseason having his receivers run the waggle. Do you think the former NFLer will have a successful year with the Stampeders?
I mean, the proof will be in the pudding, but thus far, he's at least saying all the right things. Like, he was up in Calgary for 3 weeks last year, learning, making dirt money on the practice roster. He signed back with the team after the Stamps concluded their regular season, and he was having his training buddies, presumably NFL guys or high-level college guys, running the waggle, which he said they might have hated, but he had to work on getting used to the waggle. So by all accounts, this is not a former NFLer who seems to be of the opinion, CFL, it's a joke, I'm going to come in and be the best guy on the field. No, he seems to really be taking it seriously, and I think that bodes very well for his chances. Three Down Nation exclusively reported that Chad Kelly is 50-50 to start week one for the Toronto Argonauts after suffering a leg injury during the East Final. If you had to place a bet, JC, would you bet on him starting or not starting?
I'm putting all my chips in on him sitting. Look, I get why Ryan did what he said this. He needs to be optimistic. He needs to also obfuscate a little bit. I think week one is probably overly optimistic for Chad Kelly's return based on the injury that he suffered. Even if he is technically ready to go, I don't think he'll be up to speed with the training camp reps that he'll be missing yet. So I would bet on Nick Arbuckle starting that first game, perhaps the first couple games, and then Chad Kelly coming in week 3 or 4 or 5. The Hamilton Tiger Cats released Talia Tagovailoa, the younger brother of NFL star Tua Tagovailoa. Was that move a surprise to you, Hodge?
It was, because his signing was met with so much fanfare last year. And I know that the Tiger Cats are obviously high on Taylor Powell, but this is a team with an incumbent starter in both Levi Mitchell, who is openly talking about the fact that he thinks about retirement every day, right? So I think the chances of Bo playing beyond 2025 are at best questionable and at worst dubious. So the fact that you're willing to cut bait with a maybe not a blue chip quarterback prospect, but certainly a respectable one, I think speaks to how little the Tiger Cats must have thought of what they got out of Tagovailoa last year heading into this year. There must be somebody else in that building they like a lot more. The Edmonton Elks signed homegrown offensive lineman Mark Cordy to a contract extension through 2027. Was that a smart investment?
It was. Mark Cordy is a local product, and he's a absolute blue chip offensive lineman. So you can never have too many of those guys under contract. I think it was smart for the Elks to get this deal done early. We haven't seen the numbers yet, but hopefully that came at some savings as well.
We thank you, as always, for listening to the Three Down Nation podcast. For JC, Jumbo Cheese, Velveeta, Onion Boy, Abbott, I'm John Hodge. We'll see you next week for our next episode.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.